Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
All right, it's that time of the week where we take a look at the week that was, what stood out for us. And I think the 2 days of the Budget 2021 debate in Parliament does stand out quite a bit.
It certainly does. It generated a lot of headlines. MPs saying in Parliament that the pandemic has sharpened political and social divisions in many countries, and Singapore needs to renew and strengthen its social compact to guard against such fractures in society.
You see the word social in Parliament, it really sticks out to you. And, you know, you start to ask the question, wait a minute, how does this really affect me? Let's get some analysis on this and more from Nicholas Fung, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs, Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Nicholas, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Not too bad. So we're kind of focusing on the post-budget debate. And the big question, and sorry for the start with this loaded one, the big question that MPs are asking is, how do we lift up the most vulnerable during and beyond the current crisis while conserving our country's reserves? That's a big topic of debate. And I know it's still a debate, but what are your personal thoughts on this?
Thanks for not starting with a question on Manchester United, although...
We're through to the last 16, it's okay.
indeed. But I would say, if we start on a macro level, I think one of the heartening things to note is that as the whole world grapples with, you know, just containing and dealing with the virus, keeping numbers of cases down and managing deaths, for example, the most serious impact of COVID-19, we in Singapore are in a privileged position to even start thinking about other issues. You know, if you look at the budget, I think as you guys rightly point out, the social aspect and protecting the most vulnerable, the low-wage earners in our society, and trying to think about how to uplift everyone is really, I think we all need to remind ourselves, the government's sign that we are thinking of the future. We are thinking of the next step. We're thinking of how to emerge stronger from this crisis. And I think if we look at other aspects of the budget, we're seeing how we're seeking to reinvent the country, both economically and socially and in various aspects of the community. But I think this focus on most vulnerable aspects of the society is definitely a much needed one. As we know, our economy is not doing very well. You know, we're facing a severe recession. And we, in times like these, of course, the people who are hit the hardest are those, you know, the elderly, the lower wage income earners in the community. So I personally think it's very heartening to see that there's all this focus on this. And it is a necessary check, because, you know, when we hear all these exciting things about the future, it's focused on sustainable energy, electric vehicles and stuff like that, and sort of repositioning for future growth, we can't do so and forget about the most vulnerable in the society. So I think it's definitely a good step. I guess the devil is in the details, right? And we're planning to talk a little bit about the PWM, the progressive wage model, and how this could help. The question about how we're going to do this is going to be the key issue.
Yeah, and I know Elliot's going to get into that with you in just a moment, but I want to ask you about something that means a lot to me, and this is around mental health, because the fact that this budget was called Emerging Stronger Together, and then the nature of some of the debate, it smacks to me of a prevalence of looking at the fact that we are in a phase of a crisis, and we're in that phase where we're having to look at how it's affected people and how you can leverage finances to help people who are in that difficult situation. What's your take?
I'm with you 100%, Manisha, on the issue of mental health. I think it's, even before COVID, it was something that we as a country couldn't afford to ignore. In a higher stress environment, with people taking more and more responsibilities, the world moving at a far faster pace than it used to be, it's very easy for mental health issues to both emerge, but also to be swept under the carpet. You know, as an Asian society, we still face a lot of stigma when we talk about mental health. A lot of people are hesitant to talk about it, especially in the workplace, if there's concerns that it could affect your career, for example. So I think even before COVID-19, we started to see a bit of movement within the government to address these sort of issues. And, you know, there's an emphasis on how employers and the workplace could be a great place to effect some of these measures, because, you know, it sort of overcomes a bit of the stigma if, you know, the office environment or the work environment becomes a safe place for people to raise these issues and gain access to some services and support. I was waiting to see in Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister Heng Swee Keat's budget speech whether there would be an explicit reference to mental health. Not too much details just yet, but, you know, one heartening thing from the past year to me was that we actually have a COVID-19 mental health task force that's been set up. We don't hear a lot about it. It's chaired by Dr. Janil Puthucheary, and I think that we're going to hear a lot more about how mental health issues are going to be addressed in the Committee of Supply debate, both through the Health Ministry and the Ministry for Social and Family Development. So, you know, I'm glad to see signs that the government will take this quite seriously. And if we don't, you know, I think Manisha, you sort of alluded to it, that there are challenges and people facing the recession, as I mentioned, a very uncertain global outlook, plus the persistent risk of COVID. I know we're dealing with it very well in Singapore, but there's always a risk.
Yeah.
These are things that weigh on people's minds.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I have to say that I've noticed this on my news feeds recently. Minister Alvin Tan, for example, who we all know well, was been talking about failure recently and been talking about mental health issues. It's certainly something that's coming out and getting into the headlines. But a quick follow-up. According to the Samaritans of Singapore, and my thanks to Elliot for digging up these numbers, the numbers of suicides rose 10% last year. You know, this is perhaps a figure that people don't talk about. And suicides among boys aged 10 to 19 at a record high. The question is, are we dealing with this kind of thing fast enough?
I think it's definitely something that requires a more holistic approach. When I look at the mental health and wellness environment, which again, as I mentioned, is something that I think is very important, holistically across the government, there is a little bit lack of a sort of a harmonized and unified approach to rolling out health services and support and the different types of measures to help people cope with these kind of issues. We do have a youth mental health network under the auspices of Ministry of Social and Family Development. I think it's chaired by Minister Desmond Lee. And that really targets the youth and all the challenges that they're facing. You know, of course, a worrying trend, as you mentioned there. But of course, one interesting thing that I picked up is that the young people are actually far more comfortable talking about these type of issues. Maybe it's because of, you know, exposure to more information and to these sort of things being part of the conversation in schools nowadays. But there's far less stigma from people to talk about this thing among the young demographic in Singapore. So, you know, I'm hoping that we see a more unified, holistic approach, sort of synchronized approach to delivering the support and services that people need. And this will require collaboration between the private and public sectors as well. It's not something that the government should carry alone. I mentioned employers need to play a role. Service providers within this space need to step up and see how to work together with the government. Of course, linking back to this talk about the budget, you know, the smaller companies, SMEs, typically, especially if they're dealing with, you know, a fight for survival, wouldn't want to devote a lot of time and energy to something that is traditionally seen as a little bit fluffy, a little bit fuzzy, you know, when it comes to mental health and wellness. Bigger companies, MNCs, based on a very sort of anecdotal survey that I've done, are far more open to addressing these type of issues. So one concrete way that the government could step forward is to look at the SME sector and say, okay, guys, what is it going to need for you guys to roll out these services? And can we educate you that taking care of employee mental health and wellness isn't just a cost, but it's actually going to help you become more productive and for your company to survive, to have a better chance of surviving in this current new normal.
There you go. That last line really stood out for me. Nicholas, let's talk about the progressive wage model. Singapore Retailers Association thinks that the progressive wage model could impact heartland shops more as they may not be able to compete. It's something that's being studied, but is it working for you? What more needs to be done?
This is the thorniest problem that I've always said faces the right. Singapore economy. How do we boost productivity? You know, it's something that we've been grappling for a long time. Overall productivity in Singapore has been stagnant for a long time, and I don't think we should give ourselves too hard a time on this, because it's obviously, you know, if you look around the world, there's nobody who's really cracked the code. So the progressive wage model, and I'm sure many of us will be familiar with it, but it is sort of our government's answer to minimum wage. So it's been described as minimum wage plus. Minimum wage benchmark is set for certain sectors, but it's sort of pegged to the idea that in each sector, people have to look at upskilling themselves, improving their productivity, and then the wages go up in tandem with these efforts. And this is a crucial part of Singapore's position, that we never want to become a welfare state. We don't want to have just a baseline minimum wage that everybody is just content with, because then how do we continue to progress? A small country like Singapore without a lot of natural resources, if we're not moving forward, if we're staying still, we're moving backwards, because the rest of the world is going to push ahead without us. So this is a way to address that. It is challenging because every sector, from the retail, as we mentioned, to currently it's mandatory in the cleaning, landscaping, and security sectors, they all face very different environments, very different structures. And you can't just say this wage, all sectors, should be the minimum wage, and the pathway upwards is the same across. It has to be tailored. And this complexity is part of the reason why progressive wage model, which was first set out in 2012, still only covers a very small proportion of the lowest income employees in Singapore. So I think when we talk about the retail sector, the challenges raised by the Retailers Association is the same that we face in a lot of other industries. If we establish a minimum wage, then some companies will face a lot of problems, because if they're not doing very well, if they're smaller in scale, and they have to now raise salaries to meet this minimum wage standard, that's going to be, cost ineffective for them, and they may be put out of business. But I think, as we, to again go full circle to where we started out talking about taking care of the most vulnerable in the society, this PWM, progressive wage model, is a critical aspect of it. Now, some of the opposition MPs are saying that there's different ways to roll it out, it should be tweaked, maybe we should do the minimum wage first, before we think about the plus aspect of it. I think there are 1,000 type of options that we could look at, but trying to figure out what works is going to be the tricky thing.
Okay, Nick, let's try and squeeze this one really quickly. It's about the concession deal that's been struck with Facebook and the Australian government. That's after the government made amendments to allow Facebook to choose if news remains on the platform and support the publishers it chooses. And this is where I want to get your thoughts real quick. As a former journalist, what are your thoughts on this? Because this is all our work, right, technically?
Exactly. Well, the first thing I could say is that was the fastest turnaround I've seen in positions in a long time, Yeah. First, I unfriend you, and then the next day, here's a friend request again. I think it reflects the tricky environment that a lot of governments are dealing with big tech nowadays. Big tech has become so ubiquitous, especially social media platforms like Facebook, that they've become almost a utility, right? They're almost like a public good. People say, I need this to function. And the number of people that we've seen being interviewed saying, I get my news from Facebook, I share news with my family, and I can't do this. If they take it away, then it's not right. But I mean, fundamentally, I think the issue about Facebook deriving all the revenues from advertisers by allowing the sharing of news content, and this revenue is not being shared in that sense with the news companies themselves, is a big question that is still not resolved. But I think one thing that stands out for me, the guys who are involved in the conversation now are all the big news companies, right? Your News Corp in Australia, Rupert Murdoch's Empire and stuff like that. But we are not talking about the smaller news outlets, regional news outlets. I know we don't have many of those in Singapore, but those are the guys who are really suffering today. Yeah. And this deal doesn't really address them. It only talks about the big boys. So watch this space, and I think there's a lot more to come in this area.
Very nicely put. We've been speaking with Nicholas Fung, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs, Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Nicholas, thank you for your time. Take care and stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.